Well, spring has finally arrived, and once again, it's time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about insects and our world. And Dr. Beverly Burden is our guest tonight. She's an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite you tonight to call in with your questions about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. You can call in now. Dr. Burden, thanks for joining me tonight.
As always, it's my pleasure, Bill.
And let's get started tonight with a question I have, and that is, I've been following along with the problem with the bee colonies and the collapse of many bee colonies, and I know there's a lot of new research out about what's causing the collapse of these colonies, and of course, bees are so vital to agribusiness as well as, you know, so much else. So what is the latest research concerning that?
Well, you said that they were very important to agribusiness, and they are. Just in the United States alone, with the fruit tree production, it would lose $15 billion a year if we didn't have our pollinators. Worldwide, it's estimated to be $75 billion would be lost in agribusiness worldwide. There are several factors that are contributing to colony collapse disorder, CCD, as it's referred to in the industry. And we've always known that there was a tracheal mite. A mite is very equivalent to a tick, but smaller. And it crawls into the airways of the insects and actually causes wounds, and it feeds on their blood. There's another external mite called the varroa mite. It is an outside feeder, and it also feeds on the blood. But the latest and greatest information that we have is that there is a virus known as the paralysis virus. There's also a couple varieties of what we call microfungus, microsporidia, that attacks the digestive tract. And the best hypothesis is that it is a multifaceted aspect. It's not only the virus, but also the mites and also the fungus. But this introduction of the virus is very, very novel. And they're already researching and finding ways that they can diverge that to a different direction so it's not negatively impacting the honeybees and also the bumblebees in the United States as well, worldwide.
Yeah, so it's an ongoing dilemma because, as we've talked about, bees are so vital to so much of our economy.
And this only cropped up in 2006, so it's a right. Very new phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, we have our first caller online tonight, Joe from Texas. You are on the line, and can you tell us what's bugging you?
I would just like to know which one is worse, the black widow spider or the brown recluse?
Those are the two most venomous spiders that we have in the Arklatex area, and I think that they are equally worse. I'm going to really sit on the fence with this one. When you're talking about the black widow, first of all, neither of them are very aggressive. When people get bit, it's mostly incidental. They have disturbed the spider. With the black widow, it's a very painful bite, and it attacks the nerves of the body. So sometimes if got untreated, there might be some paralysis involved. Whereas the brown recluse bite, a lot of people don't even realize they've gotten bitten by a brown recluse until the wound shows up. And if treated early enough with antibiotics, it can be controlled and not have these large ulcerated wounds on the skin. But it doesn't attack the nerves like the venom of the black widow. It actually attacks the cells. It's called a cytotoxic venom. And so that's what breaks down the cells and prevents the healing process from occurring in a natural rate.
All right, you're listening to What's Bugging You, our program about bugs and the insect world on Red River Radio with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of biology here at LSUS and, of course, our bug expert. You can call us in with your questions at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. The last time we talked, we had a growing problem with bed bug infestations. Mm-hmm. Is that still a growing problem, or is that abated at all?
No, that is still a growing problem. The problem with the bed bugs is that it's just so hard to treat them because they're protected by hiding within the mattresses, within the box springs, along the baseboards, and the bed bugs can multiply very rapidly, and all stages feed on human blood. You know, they're not like caterpillars and moth and butterflies, where you have the caterpillar stage and then you have the adult butterfly stage. All of the stages are very much similar to the adult stage, and so they all have to take that blood meal, and the female has to take that blood meal before she can lay a clutch of eggs. And what I tell people to do is you have to inspect. Anytime you go into a hotel room, pull the bed away from the wall, take the sheets off the mattress, off the box springs. Bed bugs are about the same size and color as an apple seed, and they will disperse brown, reddish droppings everywhere, and you might even see some of their shed exoskeletons in the area if you have a high enough infestation. And if you go into a hotel room that you find that, don't even bring your luggage in. Just turn around and ask for another room, or ask, go to a different company or a different hotel. The other problem is that people tend to, they'll see a nice mattress set out on the, you know, the what we call the curb alert mm-hmm. situation. They might stop. Don't take used mattresses from anybody. And if you do have a bed bug problem, after the inspection, you need to bring in an expert to try to help rid of them. What they're doing now is they're using intense heat. Take everything out of the house, except for that part that's infected, and just use big heaters to heat it up. Mm. Fumigation hasn't really proven to work that well because it just doesn't penetrate the hiding places, whereas temperature is universal across the whole room.
So if somebody is not familiar, first let me give out the numbers, 800-552-8502. You can call in with your questions about what's bugging you tonight with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. If you're a novice and you're not really sure exactly how to go about looking for signs of bed bugs, what are the telltale signs for somebody to go ahead and kind of, you know, if they want to check out their own home?
Well, if they want to check out their own home, they'll do the same type of inspection, wallpaper, the floorboards, the seams. They like to get into tight places, so the seams along the mattress, within the up into the box springs. And the other telltale sign is if they're waking up in the morning with bites. The bed bug will only bite at night, and it tends to like the extremities more than the trunk of the body. But they'll be, that's not always the case. They'll feed anywhere on the body, and they feed very similar to fleas. And in fact, it's quite hard to tell the difference between a bed bug bite and a flea bite. However, I would be amiss if I didn't add this disclaimer, and that is bed bugs are not known to carry any diseases the way that fleas are known to carry diseases. So it's more of an aesthetic. It's more of a quality of life issue with bed bugs than anything else. And especially if they're seeing the red brownish markings, then that's going to be a telltale sign as well. They've actually started using and training some service animals like dogs that can pick up the scent of bed bugs, and they're using them as inspections as well.
Okay, you're listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio. It's our program about bugs with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we have another caller online calling in. Tell me what's bugging you, sir. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, this is Cal. I've had seed ticks before, and my dogs get dog ticks, and I was just wondering if seed ticks are just the juvenile form of a dog tick, or they're different species, and also what's the best way if you get seed ticks to get rid of them?
Well, I love that question, Cal. Thank you for asking it. Seed ticks are immature adult ticks, or well, they're immature ticks. And the most amazing thing as far as metamorphosing from the immature to the adult stage is that seed ticks only have 6 legs. But once they metamorphize and molt into the adult stage, then they will have 8 legs just like the spiders and the mites do. Dipping dogs has kind of gone by the wayside. That's the way we always did it when I was a kid. But now they have some external treatments that you can apply that actually is not a classic insecticide. What it's doing is it's actually mimicking the reproductive hormones and the growth hormones of the tick, and this works with fleas as well, and it will affect their development so they don't develop into adults. And so you don't have adults, then you don't have eggs. There's also certain medications you can give your dogs for the control of teas and flicks. And what I do, if every once in a while my dog will come down with a flea or tick infestation, I just go get the flea tick shampoo from the store and just make sure that on a daily basis I shampoo them. And you also have to make sure that the outside of the house, that you mow that down and you remove the external habitat that these ticks will have. And that should solve most of your problems, and just constant inspection.
You are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio with a resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can call in with your questions at 800-552-8502. Again, that's 800-552-8502. I believe we have Greg from Shreveport on the line. Greg, what is bugging you? This may be John then. John, are you on the line?
Yeah.
Okay, this is John. What's bugging you?
So I just moved down to this area of the country, and I've never seen the hornets this big before, the big red ones. And I got stung by one, and I'm just wondering, why does it, like, my whole arm swell up for a few days?
Well, John, that's a good question. And we do have some species of hornets and wasps that are rather large for the rest of the United States. There's one called the mahogany wasp that it's a very bad venom sting. There's another one that's called the cicada killer. Most of these, however, are not aggressive unless you disturb their area or unless you're trying to swat them away. When a wasp comes flying around me, I just stand still, and they'll realize that there's nothing on me to feed on, because that's what they're doing. They're hunting for prey, and then pretty soon they'll fly away. Now, the second part of your question is dealing with the reaction to a wasp or a hornet bite. And just with many other things, more people are hypersensitive than others. There are some people that it'll only cause a red bump and perhaps a small irritation. There's some people that will react in a hypersensitive way. It sounds like you acted as a hypersensitive way, but thank goodness that you didn't act in an aggressive hypersensitive way. There's some people that have to, the minute they're stung by a bee or a wasp, that they'll have to take an epi shot, or, you know, their air pathways will close up and they'll suffocate to death. And sometimes mild sensitivity can lead to hypersensitivity. So be careful and monitor your reaction and talk it over with your family physician.
Yeah, anaphylactic shock is a serious mm-hmm. condition.
Very seriously.
You need to be very aware of that. If you're swelling up from any kind of a bug bite, take care of it immediately. You are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio, our program on entomology, our insect world, with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can call us at 800-552-8502. To get in your question tonight. We have Ross calling in. Ross, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I'm wondering, what's the best way to treat for carpenter bees? They're boring holes in the eaves of my house.
That's exactly what they're doing, and there's two different ways to treat for carpenter bees. First of all, let me use this as an education opportunity and explain to people the difference between a carpenter bee and a bumblebee. A bumblebee and a carpenter bee are about the same size. They're very large, robust bees. But a bumblebee, which is an active pollinator, has yellow on its rear end, where the rear end or the abdomen of the carpenter bee is entirely black and shiny. Now, what the carpenter bees are doing is that they're excavating these perfectly round holes into non-treated wood. They hardly ever go into treated wood, so the first thing you could do is paint your wood. Paint works a little bit better than varnish does. And if they are up in there, they're taking prey, and they're provisioning prey or honey plugs, and then they'll lay an egg, and then the immatures will develop, and then they'll escape out the other part of the hole, out the front of the hole. There are some insecticides that you can spray in the hole that will kill them off. And once you treat a hole, it's recommended that you take a dowel stick about the same diameter or some wood putty and plug that hole up. That will help with the aesthetics of that well and protect the wood. And what I do is, when I notice that they're down in my patio, I keep a little badminton racket. It's just the perfect size to pop them to the ground, and then I stomp on them. And that's about, you know, what something that we would consider mechanical control. And but they're not aggressive, but they will cause some aesthetic and probably not structural, but at least aesthetic damage to untreated wood.
You are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio. You can call us in with your questions at 800-552-8502 to talk to Dr. Beverly Burton, our resident entomologist. And we have Hazel from Shreveport next on the line. Hazel, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I have a question, sir, about moths. I've had two infestations of moths in the pantry. And I was told they come in on, like, meal and flour, and they were just horrible to get rid of. So my question is how to prevent it, or, you know, what to look for that would stop that from happening in the future.
Well, first of all, let's talk about what they are. These are small moths, you're absolutely right, and they are called the Indian meal moth, and they will feed on any type of grain or legume material. What I always do when I bring flour, cornmeal, even beans, lentils into the house is I put them in the freezer for 48 hours and then take them out. And then when I open them up, I inspect the bag to make sure that there wasn't a pre-infestation in there that was at high enough levels to notice. And then you need to make sure that you store your meal in the pantry in tight, tight containers, Saran bags, Ziploc bag type of light plastic materials don't work. They have to be in thick Tupperware-like bags, or I probably shouldn't be saying a lot of trade names, but you know what I mean by the thicker things. And also, you have to be careful that they, if you have screw type lids on the on perhaps some of your containers, that the threads aren't so loose. I've had them actually crawl through the threads to get to the material. The other thing is that there's probably in your pantry, there's probably going to be one thing that's what I call a hot spot. It's going to be an area of the main infestation, and then it's going to spread throughout. The other thing is that the little caterpillars, once they are in the stage to be developing into the adult caterpillars, or the adult moths, I should say, will crawl away from wherever they're feeding, and they will pupate. You need to take your shelving out if you can, look behind them. What you're going to have to do is take everything out of your pantry, clean everything off, find the hot spot, and then put it all back together, and then try to prevent that in the past by the measures that I talked about earlier. And you have to just be very, very persistent and aggressive on that.
And you are listening to What's Bugging You tonight here on Red River Radio with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. She is an associate professor of biology here at LSUS, and she's here to answer your questions about bugs. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go to our next caller now, and please tell us what's bugging you. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, and what's bugging you tonight?
I have a question about wasps. My husband's allergic to them. Is there something I can spray on my porch and around my house that can be a deterrent to where they won't build nests? And my second question is, I work at a place that has a infestation of black widow spiders, and I have also seen like an iridescent spider, but it has the same markings as a black widow, except the hourglass is orange instead of red, and I didn't know if that was a species of the black widow spider.
Okay, that's quite a bit. Let me start off with the wasp. I'm sorry your husband is allergic to those, but there are some measures that you can take. Once a week, I walk around my house, and I do a weekly inspection, and I look up in the eaves of the house to make sure that there's no developing wasp nest. If there are, that way you can take care of it before the wasp nest grows to be these massive wasps. But that's not always the case, because a lot of wasps will build their nest underground. So you have the paper wasps that build the little paper nets. You have the hornets that build the paper nets that are enclosed. And then you have the wasps underground. One thing that you can do is take and get some yellow plastic dishes. A lot of people use, you know, the old yellow butter dishes that the margarine came in, and put some soapy water in there. Wasps are attracted to yellow, and they will fly in being attracted to yellow, and they'll land down in that soapy water, and then they won't be able to fly back out. So you can trap them in that way. Inspection of the house is another way. And when you do need to destroy the nest, do so at night, because that's when they're all going to be at home. And you can go to the store and buy these wasp and hornet sprays that will spray up to 20-something feet. But a lot of times you'll need a flashlight. Don't hold the flashlight and spray the nest at the same time. Put the flashlight somewhere else, because those that will escape are going to be attracted to that light, and you're basically illuminating yourself for a secondary attack. Now, as far as the black widows at your workplace, black widows like to build their nest in corners and underneath things. And so have perhaps, you know, one day at lunch, say, okay, everybody, we're going to do a black widow inspection, and go around and undisturbed habitats, too. They're not going to build their nest in heavy traffic habitats, so undisturbed, low places. And you can buy spider spray, or you can just take something, knock them down, and stomp on it. I know that doesn't sound very friendly, but that's the way it is. With the other iridescent orange spiders, there are some black widow. There's enough in the species diversity, the population diversity, that not all black widows have a red hourglass marking, and it may not be complete. It may only be part of an hourglass. It may be more orangey than red. So what I am thinking you're seeing is just the population diversity. Just like all humans aren't alike, there's a lot of diversity in certain species of spiders and other insects as well.
You're listening to What's Bugging You on Red River Radio. Give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 about anything dealing with the insect world. And we have Josh from Longview. You're online. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, it's not bugging me so much, but it bugs the heck out of my wife.
Alrighty.
Cockroaches. What is the best way to control or just eliminate cockroaches?
Outside or inside, Josh?
Inside the house, or we're in a camper right now. But
Let me tell you exactly what you need to do. Go to the store, and it's very cheap. There'll be something that's called cockroach killer, or something of that name, some kind of trade name. But one thing that I really like to educate people on is active ingredients. If you look at the active ingredients, it's got, by law, it has to be somewhere on that label, and it'll be a powdered boric acid, B-O-R-I-C, boric acid. It's very simple. It's non-toxic to pets or to children. And what you need to do, most of the time, these come in kind of like it's a powder, but it will come in a bottle kind of shaped like a mustard or old-fashioned ketchup. And you need to do a light dusting of this boric acid around the perimeter of the rooms. You can even do this in the cupboards. You know, you don't want to spray it on the dishes, but and it has to be a light spray. Don't cake it down. Just put a powder spray on there. And what happens is the cockroaches like to walk around the edges of things. It's a situation that we call positive thigmatotactic. And they'll pick up this boric acid powder on them, and it's an irritant to them. And just like a cat, they will preen themselves and ingest this boric acid. And once the boric acid gets down into the digestive system of the cockroach, it will literally cause ulcers to form. It'll blow little holes in their intestine, and they will die. But it'll take a while for this to do. And just, you know, when you find them, sweep them up, vacuum them up, just do a mechanical control of them. And sooner or later, you will take care of your cockroach problem. Also, make sure that you don't leave a lot of potato chips or other food stuff out. They're just in there eating what you're eating.
You're listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio, our programs about the insect world with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of entomology and biology here at LSUS. You can call 800-552-8502 with your calls right now, and we're going to go next to Justin. Justin, what is your question? What's bugging you tonight?
Well, my daughter got bit by a cow ant about 2 days ago, and it looks like it's really swollen. She says it's like her pinky toe's fixing to fall off. What's the best way to treat it, and how can I keep it from happening again?
Well, first of all, let's tell the rest of the public what a cow ant is. Excuse me. A cow ant, and Justin, if you're still online, it's a big black and red hairy ant that crawls on the ground, right?
Right.
Well, actually, these are called velvet ants, and they're not ants at all. What they are is actually a wingless female wasp, and she has a stinger about the half the size of her body. They're normally about an inch length. And the reason that they call them cow killers is supposedly the sting is so bad that it could knock down a cow, which would have to be pretty bad. Now, the venom inside, there's not much you can do about that, but I would keep the area washed, elevated, cold compress. And I'm a PhD, not an MD, but if there is any signs of infection, I would definitely get her to the clinic. And if it's not better within 24 hours of that kind of just common sense, what grandma would do treatment, then I would definitely take her in, because she might have a secondary infection in there, and that's something that you'll want to treat with antibiotics.
Right, thank you.
No problem.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio, our program about entomology with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question concerning bugs, our insect world, either the fiends or the friends, you can give us a call right now. I know in the past we've talked about termites and termite infestations around the area, and of course this is the season where they tend to come out. So what is the situation with termites right now throughout the state of Louisiana, Texas, and Arkansas?
All right. Well, the termite that most of us are aware of in this area of the country is called the subterranean termite. And of course, termites have a caste system. They have the workers, just like the ants have the workers, but they also have a caste system known as the soldiers, who have very large heads and very large mandibles and can protect the colony. And of course, then there's the queen. The one thing about these subterranean termites is that they must maintain contact with the soil. And so if they're going from the soil up into your residence, especially if you are on a slab house, then you need to inspect that. Look behind the bushes. And if you see any what they call dirt tubes or dirt tunnels coming up through the soil into the house, then that's the first sign that you may have a subterranean termite problem. Also, you have to control moisture. And this is a big thing this time of year. We just had the big storms rolling through the Arklatex area. And most people don't realize they have a termite problem until they find out that they have a plumbing problem. They go to replace the toilet and reseat it, and next thing you know, it's falling through the wood because the foundation, the decking, just isn't there. And so you have to control the moisture and do the inspection. And unfortunately, most of the insecticides to treat termites has to be done by a professional applicator. You have to have a license to do that. Now, they also have these baits that you can put into the ground, and there's a lot of debate going on about baits. That's where you put them in the soil, and they're supposed to come and eat this and take it back to the colony and kill the colony. But you're also attracting termites to where these baits are, and they tell you to put them close to the house. So it's a bit of a controversy. But we also, Bill, have now, it basically came about in 2000, these other termites that's called the Formosan subterranean termites. And these have probably been in the United States for about 50 years, but they only became noticeable about 20 years ago, especially in the mid-90s down in the New Orleans area. Now, let me explain to you about these Formosan subterranean termites. They are, they have larger colonies. Their colonies are about 10 times the size of a regular termite colony that we would have here in Louisiana or Arkansas or Texas. They are very aggressive. They will go out and forage and take food, and so therefore they're damaging at an extremely larger rate. And there's been about $5 million projects that was pumped into the French Quarter down in New Orleans. I have two friends of mine that's working on that project, Dr. Greg Henderson and Dr. Dennis Ring with the USDA and with LSU. And it's just staying on top of them, and then once you find a colony, clearing them out. The other really bad, bad thing about the Formosan termite is that it can eat living wood. The regular termite that we have in this area that's native to this area can only eat dead wood. And so now you have these Formosan termites attacking our deciduous trees, and those are the hardwoods rather than the softwoods like the pines. And so it's a big threat, big threat.
You're listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio, a program about bugs in our insect world. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 with your questions. And Dr. Beverly Burden is our resident entomologist and an expert on the insect world. We have, I believe, Susan coming up next. Susan from El Dorado, what's bugging you? Hello?
Hello.
Yep, you're on the air. What's bugging you?
Yes, bumblebees. Bumblebees. I don't have much wood on my home, but we did build an extension to the home when we came back a few years ago, where we can pull our cars under. And the bumblebees want to come in and bore holes. Is there anything we can do about that? And one other question. The big spiders that have legs that are long, someone told me they were wolf spiders. Are they poisonous if they bite you? And white flies on vegetation, what can I do? I don't want to take up a whole lot of time, but those were my three questions.
Well, Susan, first of all, Josh called in a little while ago and was asking about carpenter bees. Carpenter bees and bumblebees look a lot alike. If they have yellow on their rear ends, they're bumblebees, but what you're describing to me are the carpenter bees. Carpenter bees have a very black, shiny rear end, no yellow at all. And what you can do with those, you can knock them down and stomp on them. That works very well, especially if you have something like an old racket that have the holes long, like a badminton racket. The other things you can do is you can squirt insecticide in there, but once you treat a hole or, you know, a canal up into the wood, then you want to take a dowel stick or some wood putty and cover it up. Now, the big wolf spiders that you're talking about, those, if they're, I get these calls all the time, oh, I've got this huge, huge spider. And the first thing I ask people, is it brown and hairy, or is it shiny and pretty? And if they tell me it's brown and hairy, then it's going to be a wolf spider. They are not aggressive. If they are in your house, they're just lost in there. They're looking for something to eat. And I normally will tell people just to stomp on them, but not the wolf spider. I would tell you to brush and sweep the wolf spider outside, because oftentimes the mother wolf spider will be carrying babies on its back. So here you stomp the mother, and you have about 20 babies running off the mother's back into the crevice of your kitchen, and now you've gone from one spider to 20 spiders, and that's just not a good thing. If they're big spiders that are shiny and pretty, then these are the Aragope spiders, the orb weaver spiders, and they're harmless too. And those are the ones that will build the big nest that are the big webs at night and catch all kinds of insects and then tear it down and rebuild it the next morning. White flies. Let me tell you how to figure out whether they're white flies or whether they're something else. If you have a shrub or, you know, some type of a plant that you think is infected with white flies, just walk over to it and give it a good shake. And if it looks like a cloud of white is flying off of there and then it settles right back down, then you have white flies. And I'm going to give you the simplest solution and the cheapest solution to fight white flies. They're actually very delicate, soft-bodied organisms. And one thing that soft-bodied insects have a problem with is keeping the right amount of moisture to keep their body from drying out, from desiccation. And get a spray bottle. Probably it holds like about a quart or so, and put water in there, and then put about a teaspoon of dishwashing soap in there, mix it up good, and spray your plant down. Don't saturate it to where it's dripping off the leaves, and make sure you spray it from the bottom up, because oftentimes they're on the bottom of the leaves, and mist that plant, and do that for every other day, and you will take care of your white fly problem.
You are listening to What's Bugging You tonight on Red River Radio. You can call us right now at 800-552-8502 with any questions about the insect world. We have Kevin calling in next. Kevin's on the road. Kevin, what's bugging you tonight?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Quick question. I've recently kind of gained interest in tarantula hawks. So I know we have them in East Texas, and I've never seen any tarantulas in East Texas. I was wondering what species of spiders that tarantula hawks mainly prey on. That's it.
Yeah, tarantula hawks and spiders, normally they're these spiders that are called, they don't really have a good common name, but they're called the Papilio spiders. And they normally have large black bodies and smoky orange wings. They'll have antennae that are curled. And those are the ones that will attack tarantulas. The tarantulas really aren't going to be attacking them. The only reason that they're called tarantula hawks is because they will attack tarantulas. So a tarantula hawk really isn't a tarantula, but it's another species of wasp that will attack tarantulas. Tarantulas are pretty much just ground hunters. And to use the word hawk with a tarantula means that they're much more active. They'll crawl up in things, but that's not true at all. And so they're not very common. Once you get past East Texas into Louisiana very much, but they do exist.
And you are listening to What's Bugging You here on Red River Radio. Our resident entomologist is Dr. Beverly Burden, and we're taking your calls tonight at 800-552-8502. We're going to go next to Anthony. Anthony, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, there's a bug that you normally find around the house. It looks like a big spider or a big ant, and it has red stripes around it. It's black with red stripes on it. Is it dangerous, or do you know what it is?
A bug that is black with red stripes. It sounds right to me. Is it about maybe a half an inch in length?
Yes.
Yeah, those are what we refer to as box elder bugs. There's a whole group of these that exist. They are primarily plant feeders, and they come out this time of the year and start looking for host plants, and they actually are sap feeders. And so I would just monitor your plants around the house, make sure that they're not having any significant damage. I had a call about these a few weeks ago, feeding on oleander plants, and it's rare that you have these box elder bugs feeding on oleander plants. If it's not the box elder bug, then it could also be the milkweed bug. It will feed on various plants as well, and it is also black with red stripes. So if you wanted to Google up box elder, Google up milkweed bug, and you'll probably find what you're talking about it. And just any general pesticide will take care of these if you want to apply some pesticides. And sometime, you know, when we're not fielding calls, so I would like to maybe talk a little bit about different types of pesticide and educate people a little bit more on that sometime.
All right. Well, we'll plan that show out right now. Give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. Any question about bugs and our insect world, both fiends and foes, you can call in right now and speak with Dr. Beverly Burden. She is our resident entomologist. And we have Hector from Arkansas next on the line. Hector, what's bugging you tonight? Hector, are you there? Hello, Hector. I can hear somebody there, but we're going to move on to our next call. And we are going to Ben from Dry Prong. Ben, what's bugging you tonight? Hello, Ben?
This is Hector.
Oh, this is Hector. Okay, Hector, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I got a problem with fire ants. They're all over my yard and, you know, everywhere in my garden and all that. And I just want to know, how can I get rid of them?
Okay, Hector, I love questions about fire ants, especially this time of year. It's the perfect question to ask an entomologist. We all know what fire ants are. We all know they're not native to the United States. And we all know that they build these large mounds. This time of the year is when they also go out on their mating swarms. And just like we had a bunch of rain yesterday, we had a bunch of rain today in the Arklatex area. If it gets above 80 81, 82 degrees tomorrow, then look out on sidewalks and on driveways, and you'll see fire ant queens and fire ant males that are doing these mating swarms. And then once they mate, they will crawl into the ground, the female will, the wings will pop off, and she'll start a colony. Now, the best thing to do is to treat the mounds. But there's also other bait that you can put out in your yard. A lot of people do it both ways. And in fact, this was perfected down at Texas A&M University in Bryan College Station. It's called the Texas Two-Step. And it's a mound treatment, and I can recommend that you get any type of fire ant treatment that has the chemical acephate, A-C-E-P-H-A-T-E, in it. It's not very pet friendly, so make sure you watch the dogs and the kitties and that they don't go around to the mound. And it normally comes in a dust. You only apply about a teaspoon around it, and that will effectively kill the mound. We also have, there's certain fire ant baits like Amdro you can put out that the ants will find and then take back to the mound, and it'll be toxic to the queen and to the other workers. And so those are the two major things that you can do. What I don't recommend you do is to pour gasoline on them and set them fire. A lot of people like to do that. It's not good for the environment, and it's actually a very dangerous thing to do because that gasoline can seep down into certain crevices, and another fire can come up 5 feet away, and somebody can get hurt. The other thing is, a lot of people think that once they treat the mound, that the mound just moves. Let me talk about that for just a minute. That's normally incorrect. What people don't realize is they'll see a main mound there, and then there'll be other smaller mounds or colonies around it that are being suppressed, that are being bullied by the main fire ant colony. And once you kill out the main fire ant colony, then these other little fire ant colonies that have been suppressed and bullied will start to pop up. And it looks like it just moved from one area to the next, but that's absolutely not true. I also don't recommend using grits or cornmeal. A lot of people, it's an old wives' tale. Scientifically, we've tested it. It really doesn't work. And they think that they'll eat the cornmeal and then it'll swell up in its gut and blow them up. But the other cool thing about it, too, is that the United States, through the USDA program, is doing a release of biological control. They're releasing these little flies. They're teeny, teeny, teeny little flies. And they will hover above a fire ant and lay an egg in there. And then the little egg will hatch. And then the little fly maggot will crawl into the fire ant and parasitize and kill it. And they're having some great success because they've gone down to Brazil and imported this little fly back up to the United States, where the fire ant originated was Brazil.
You're listening to What's Bugging You, our program about bugs and our insect world with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She's an associate professor of biology here at LSUS and Red River Radio's bug specialist. You can call in at 800-552-8502 with any question or concern about our insect world, both the friendly insects, which there are plenty of, and of course the fiendish ones as well. And we're going to Jack from Bossier City next. Jack, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi, I'm just kind of curious about June bugs. They seem like every time I come to work in the morning, I find a bunch of June bugs dying on the brick wall, and then I walk out in the afternoon and they're being eaten by ants. And I'm just wondering what their deal is. What's their purpose in life, and why do they always seem to be flocking towards death so quickly? And just what's the story with June bugs?
I love June bugs. I remember being a kid, I was also fascinated with them as well, Jack. The June bugs that we have here are, of course, those big, they're about the size of a penny, about the same color as a penny. The big copper brown June bugs, and they are foliage feeders. They will emerge out of the ground. Their immatures are what we call white grubs. If you've ever been digging for fish bait, you turn over the soil and there'll be these big C-shaped white grubs. Those are actually the immatures of the fire ant, and they are down in the soil eating the roots of the plants. They're normally not in that large of enough of a population to cause any damage. But I can tell you that people that work on golf courses do not like to have grubs in their area because they can become pests and they'll have to fight those. They emerge as the adults. The adults will feed on the foliage, and then they will mate, and then they will die. and that's their sole purpose is to emerge, mate, and die. But they spend almost an entire year underground feeding on the roots. So it's not like you should feel sorry for the June bugs, like they're just emerging and dying. They've had a good long life, but as immatures, as teenagers, if you will, raising havoc with the roots. And now there's another thing that looks like a June bug, but it's called a rose chafer. It will have some iridescent green on its back, and it can be a debilitating bad pest on roses. And they feed at night, so if you're having something eating your roses, you need to go out there at night and look for the green June bugs. And they're all in the family of scarabs, which is one of my favorite topics as well because of their link to the ancient Egyptians.
You are listening to What's Bugging You, and our program is about bugs tonight. You can call us at 800-552-8502 with any question about our insect world and speak to Dr. Beverly Burden, our resident entomologist. And we're going next to Tony. Tony is on the line, and Tony, what's bugging you tonight?
I have some Texas leafcutter ants that keep getting into my garden and eating up some shrubs around my house, and I was curious if you could make any recommendations on how to prevent that.
Two things. One, let me back up to Jack's question. He also said, what are good are June bugs? They are a significant, they play a significant role in the food web of both amphibians and birds. And so they help to feed the birds and the frogs of the world as well. And so that's a significant contribution. Now, as far as leafcutter ants, Attica ants is what their scientific name is. And they are cutting down the leaves of plants. And then they are carrying these leaves back down into their nest where they do not eat the leaves, but they grow a specific fungus on the leaves, and it's the fungus that they actually eat. I've never had anybody call and ask me how to control leafcutter ants, but I'm going to answer that is in general ant control, and that is just like with the fire ants, you can treat the mounds. And the interesting thing about leafcutter ants is this is probably their most active time. When it gets into the heat of the summer, they go completely underground, just like a spy would, you know, and you're not going to see them. And some of these mounds can be huge. I'm talking several, sometimes yards in diameter, about the size of a car. And I would just go to wherever you want to buy pesticides and apply it. And pesticides, or you might also just sprinkle a bait around the perimeter of your garden, and that might deter them from entering into your garden, and that way they can find other plants to harvest the leaves from. Good luck with that.
You are listening to What's Bugging You tonight on Red River Radio with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can call in with your questions at 800-552-8502, and we go next to Ben. Ben is calling in. Ben, what's bugging you tonight?
Hello.
Hello.
Let me see. Last year I only saw three or four, cow ants and probably 15 or 20 devil horses or army crickets. And I've got a colony of town ants or leafcutter ants that are on the back of my property. How can I encourage these insects?
Which ones do you want to encourage?
Especially the cow ants. I don't see many of them nowadays.
Well, you know, I get a lot of questions, like, especially we don't see fireflies like we used to. We don't see cow ants like we used to. And for some people, that would be a good thing because they're averse to any type of creepy crawly critters. But others recognize the ecological contributions and the aesthetic contributions that they make to areas. Now, the cow ants, they're going to be, I've talked about those earlier tonight a couple times. Those are the red velvet ants is what a lot of people refer to them. They're wingless female wasps, and they're hunting. And so the best way to encourage the use of all insects is to not use that very many types of chemical pesticides, or I should say non-organic pesticides in the area. And that's going to encourage the ants that are feeding on the other insects or feeding, unless it is the leafcutter ants that are going to be feeding on the on the plants, and as well as the what kind of crickets you're talking about, are those the what we would call the humpback crickets?
No, ma'am. I think you're talking about the tan ones that live underground. These are the large black and red and yellow ones.
I think what you're talking is, I think the black, orange, and yellow ones, those are the those are actually grasshoppers and not crickets, and they have little truncated wings. Is that what describes those? Okay. Again, they're going to be feeding on foliage, and we call those lubber grasshoppers. That's the problem with common names of insects and spiders and things, is you have your regional names, and you go up to the northeast and they call them something different, and then you go down to the southeast and they call them something different. So that's why scientists like scientific names, so we're all speaking the same language. But I love to just think about some of the regional names of these, because they're so, you know, culturally, you could tell us a lot about a culture.
It's sort of the color of it all.
Yes, it is, so. Bill. And those, again, those are going to be eating foliage. That's what grasshoppers and crickets eat, is just foliage or dead or decaying material. And just reduce the use of pesticides. I was talking to a lady earlier tonight about using soap water as a type of insecticide that's going to be darn harmful to the other native species around. There's other types of botanical pesticides that you can use that actually comes from plants themselves. Plants make a lot of chemicals that deter the feeding of insects, and so there's a lot of other alternatives than just synthetic chemically produced pesticides.
You are listening to What's Bugging You, and our program tonight is with Dr. Beverly Burden, a resident entomologist. You can call in at 800-552-8502. We're going to go to Greg now. Greg is online, and Greg, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, sir. I have large black ants on my front porch. They've been becoming more and more frequent, and I found a couple in my front foyer too. And I was wondering if I need to start. There might be carpenter ants. If I need to see if I need to get underneath the house, see if I can find the nest, or they just might be something else.
Well, it's highly unlikely that they're carpenter ants. Carpenter ants exist more in the northern regions of the United States rather than the southern regions of the United States. For people that don't or never heard of carpenter ants, here in the south, we talk about termites doing structural damage by eating the wood. Carpenter ants in the north do structural damage. They are like the termites of the north, is what I like to call them. But they don't actually eat the wood. They just excavate it. And so they're still causing structural damage, just like our southern termites do. There are many, 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 many hundreds of different species of ants. The world expert is a scientist up at Harvard called E.O. Wilson. And if they're large, then I would suspect that they're a native species here. The larger black ant, we also had the smaller black ant. And I always like to see if I can't find the nest and treat the nest with, and if they're invading your house, you want to be a little aggressive with this and treat the nest. If you can't treat the nest, I would just get me a generic bottle of insecticide and just spray down that area. And every time I see a bunch of them, I'd spray them. And eventually you'd probably get on top of the problem. Now, there is something that's called the little black ant that will invade houses, and they like to enter into any type of a cavern or a hole between sheetrock, things like that. But they are tiny, 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 tiny. And with that, then you also need to do the same thing, or just stay constant. Don't allow any food. Control moisture. If you control moisture, you control most ants.
All right. And we have time for one more caller on our program tonight. And we're going to go to Sean now. Sean, what's bugging you?
Hi. First, I want to say I'm really enjoying your show. Second of all, I'd like to say that I have a boathouse on Lake Palestine that is overrun with spiders, and I'm looking for a safe way to decrease the amount of spiders, given that the lake is a, you know, drinking water supply for cities.
Well, if I lived on a boathouse, and I don't know that much about boathouses, but I assume that you have running water out there, I would just take and spray them, get me a hose and spray them overboard. If they're on the inside of the house, then you can probably take and lay down some insecticide barriers, so when they do try to cross the threshold, they'll pick up those. On the inside of the house, most general pesticides will work. But here's something I want to tell you, Sean. read the active ingredient and get a pesticide that ends in the suffix THRIN. That's a primethrin, and those are safe to spray in the houses. And so good luck with that, Sean. And thanks for calling in, and thanks for liking the show. We love doing it.
All right, you're listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio. And we do have time for one more call, so we're going to go to Clara from El Dorado. Clara, what's bugging you tonight? Hello, Clara? Can you hear me, Clara? All right, we're going to go to our next caller. I believe this might be David. David from Minden, what's bugging you tonight? Oh, well, we lost both of them. Ah, David from Minden, what's bugging you tonight?
All right, so last year I had a wonderfully large natural honeybee population. Saw them all the way into the winter. Like, every day it'd get warm enough, you'd see them out. This year, so far, I haven't seen hardly any. And I didn't know if maybe they've gone from that disorder or something, or if, you know, they just don't like my neighborhood anymore.
It is probably due to the colony collapse disorder. That would be my first guess, because right now they should be extremely active, and the colony collapse disorder will eventually cut the population to any nest down to significantly low levels. And, you know, you can always get you a bee box and monitor them and get with the local beekeeper, and it's a great hobby to have.
And you are listening to What's Bugging You from Red River Radio, and we are your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS. Next week, we're going to have another program of Health Matters here on Red River Radio. We're going to bring Beverly back in August again to do another show of What's Bugging You at that time. And we're going to be starting a new show coming up in June on birds, so stay tuned for that. More information about that coming your way. I do have one final question, because we've talked a lot about getting rid of bugs. Let's talk about how beneficial bugs really are to our environment, because there's so many beneficial versions that we could do a whole show just on that. But especially spiders. I mean, spiders do a lot of beneficial work. They're a little creepy and a little crawly, but really they keep down a lot of the other pest populations, don't they?
They do. Spiders, there's been a lot of scientific studies done on the impact of spiders to insect populations and different types of communities, whether it be a tropical community or more of an arid community, and they make significant contributions. And not so that they decimate, but they keep everything in balance. And that's what we want to do. We want to keep things in balance, keep some of the good bugs around and keep not so much of the bad bugs around. Things like spiders, praying mantids, ladybugs. I would love to talk to you more about ladybugs, but I know we're running out of time. And there's also these little bitty things that are called green lace wings. They're very, very small. They're about the size of a lady beetle. They're very delicate looking, hence the term lace wings. And if you look at them close enough, they have golden eyes. But them and their offspring are voracious aphid eaters. And so they do a lot in maintaining the good bug population as well.
All right. I want to thank you, Dr. Burden, for coming in tonight. It's always a pleasure to be with you and, of course, to hear your expertise on our insect world.
My pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
You've been listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden here on Red River Radio. She is an associate professor of biology at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. We'd like to thank each of our callers tonight and hope you'll join us next time for another edition of What's Bugging You here on Red River Radio. Tune in next Thursday night at 6 p.m. for Health Matters here on Red River Radio with Kermit Poling as your host. What's Bugging You is produced by Renee Moran and Bill Beckett with assistance from Wally Derleth, Daniel Gordy, and Kermit Poling. Dr. Beverly Burden is our expert entomologist, and I've been your host tonight, and this has been a production of Red River Radio, KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, Magnolia, and KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches.